I noticed 6 years ago that I was walking, when I'd walk up the steps here, I didn't hear as much creaking as I do now. So 6 years, I'm very appreciative that you continue, for some reason, to put up with me. So thank you. I'm blessed. Gracious and holy God, startle us with the grace that has a way of stirring trouble in our hearts. But the kind of trouble that leads to our healing and wholeness. Amen. I love the way Eugene Peterson, his translation of the Bible, The Message, I love the way he translates verse 25 and verse 26 of what we just heard. Eugene Peterson says, the way that God has designed the body is a model for how we are to live together in community. Each part is dependent on every other part. When one part hurts, all other parts hurt and are involved in the healing. And when one part flourishes, all other parts enter into exuberance. When one part hurts, any part, all hurt, and all are involved in the healing. And I wonder in some ways whether Paul there is suggesting not necessarily only the healing for the part that hurts, but somehow for us to be part of someone's hurt is about our healing and our wholeness. I mean, whoa, what a radically different vision of the world. I mean, what a radically different vision of the world that we live in. You know, the world where there's winners and there's losers, and we don't care so much about the losers. The world where there is the strong and there is the weak, and we just kind of leave them behind. You know, the world where you look after yourself. The world where you have to show your strength, you have to prove yourself. God forbid there's any vulnerability. God forbid you show anybody any kind of weakness. The world we live in is a world of hierarchy. A world where there's a top and there is a bottom. And there's judgment about both. The world where there's winners and there's losers. The world where there's strong and there's weak. Paul here is offering a radically different vision. A vision of community. A community where everyone belongs. Everyone. Everyone has a place. Everyone's gifts, not just those we admire, everyone's gifts are valued and affirmed. A vision where the vulnerable, the weak, the powerless, the poor are not discarded and judged and cast aside, but somehow they're necessary for our healing, our wholeness. One of my favorite books is by Kent Harouf, who was here a couple years ago for The Nature of Words. It's a book called Plain Song. I love this novel. It was one of these novels that got turned into a movie, and I so wish it wasn't. But it's a great book. And in this book, the book is about a small little town in Colorado, simple folks, ordinary folks doing ordinary things, who sometimes have the capacity to extend extraordinary grace to each other. Stories about a father, two sons, their mother struggling with depression, about a school teacher who lives with and cares for her elderly father who has dementia. About a pregnant teenager who's all alone. And about two crotchety old bachelor farmers, ranchers, who are kind of set in their own ways and live a fairly closed life on a ranch about 17 miles south of Holt, Colorado. Well, Victoria, the 17-year-old, is kicked out of her house because she's pregnant. Now, Maggie, the school teacher, takes her in. But Maggie lives with her elderly father who has dementia, and the situation pretty soon becomes impossible. So Maggie drives 17 miles south of Holt, Colorado, to visit the McFerrin brothers, Raymond and Harold. And she's standing alongside the barn, and she sees these two brothers driving their tractors because they're out feeding cattle in the winter pasture. And she steps away from the barn as they get off their tractors and they move kind of slowly in their heavy winter coveralls. And here's a bit of how the conversation took place between them. Harold said, "You're going to freeze to death. You know, you better get out of the cold. What are you, lost?" And Maggie laughed and said, "You know, probably. I want to talk to you both." And Harold said, "Uh-oh, that means trouble." And Maggie said, "You know, are you scared of me already? Have I scared you away already?" And Harold said, "Well, you know, when people come want to talk to us, it usually means they want something." And Maggie said, well, I do. So they entered into the small little ranch house, the farmer's farmhouse, you know, bachelors. There was stacks of magazines everywhere, and there was greasy farm machinery, I think, on every piece of furniture. And Maggie says, "I have a favor." "Yeah, what is it? What do you want?" And Maggie said, "Well, there's this girl. Good girl. But she's gotten herself into a bit of trouble. And I think you can help. I want to ask you if you can help her." And Harold said, well, what does she need? She need a donation of money?" And Maggie said, "Well, she needs a lot more than that." And Raymond said, "What kind of trouble is she in?" And Maggie said, "Well, she's 17 and pregnant and has no husband." And Harold said, "Well, heck yeah, I reckon that would give you a little bit of trouble." And then Maggie said that her father, the father of this family, abandoned the family years and years and years ago. The mother kicked Victoria out of the house because she was pregnant. The father of the child won't have anything to do with her. And Harold said, "Well, okay, you got our attention now. If you don't want money, what do you want?" And Maggie says, "Well, I want you to help her. I want you to take her in. I want her to live with you. I want you to take care of her." And there was this silence. And Harold says, "You fooling." And Maggie said, I'm not fooling. And both brothers were kind of dumbfounded for a moment, and they looked at Maggie as if she was dangerous. And Maggie said, "You know, I know it's crazy. I know it sounds crazy. It probably is crazy. But she needs somebody. And you too? Well, you old coots need somebody too. You need somebody or something more than that red cow to take care of and to worry about. And then Maggie said, someday you'll die and you won't have enough trouble in your life. The right kind of trouble. Here's your chance. And Harold said, well, let's get back to the money. I think money would be easier. And Maggie said, yeah, probably, but not nearly as much fun. Anyway, I'd like you to think it over. And Maggie left. The brothers turned to each other in total silence and went back to work. I love that line. If anything this morning, may that line jar you in some way. Someday you'll die, and you won't have enough trouble in your life. The right kind of trouble. Now here's your chance. Do you have enough trouble in your life? The right kind of trouble? You know, the life of faith is a life of trouble. The life of faith is a life that always, always, always seems to welcome the right kind of trouble. Look at Jesus, was always in trouble. Always in trouble. Jesus was breaking every rule everywhere he went. Look at the folks that Jesus hung out with. He hung out with all of the folks that nobody else wanted to hang out with. He hung out with the outcasts. He hung out with the unwanted. He hung out with those who were poor, were lost, were broken. All of the religious folks, they thought Jesus was dangerous. They thought he was trouble. Who did Jesus prefer to keep company with? The poor, the broken, the lost, the hurting. The vision that the Apostle Paul paints for us today is a vision that welcomes the right kind of trouble. It's a vision where if somebody hurts, you can't turn your back. Because their hurt, their trouble, is your trouble. And then the Apostle Paul says the most paradoxical, confusing, challenging thing. He said, and their healing is wrapped up in your own healing. To get involved in their trouble is to be healed and made whole. You know, a person I think maybe more than anyone I've ever read about or heard about or learned about it, that welcomes with grace the right kind of trouble is Jean Vanier. In 1964, Jean Vanier, who was the son of a former Governor General of Canada, in 1964, Jean Vanier was a professor of theology at the University of Toronto, and he visited an institution in 1964, an institution for those who were cognitively challenged and physically challenged. Back in 1964, that wasn't the language they used. They used far more harsh, judgmental language to describe those who were in this particular institution. And for Jean Vanier, walking in the doors, it was as if God stirred the right kind of trouble in his heart. And everything changed. He invited two of these men who were significantly, cognitively, and physically challenged from the institution to live with him. To live with him in his small little house. Pretty soon, 400 people became part of this community. And he called it L'Arche, which is French for the Ark. Today there are 140 of these communities across the entire world. And Jean Vanier's goal was really simple. To create communities of grace where those with ability and disability belong and have a place and are valued and loved. He said his goal was simple, to create communities of grace and belonging so that the world just might be a little less harsh and a little more friendly. Not a bad goal for a church, really. Jean Vanier said, you know, we asked the wrong theological question. When someone is born with a disability of some kind, when somebody experiences the unfairness of life, whether some kind of suffering, whether it be cancer or any kind of other suffering, the question we ask is why? Why would God allow such a thing? And Jean Vanier says that question is understandable, but we all know there never is a satisfying answer. He said a better question is, how can we create communities where people of ability, people of disability, people of frailty, brokenness, all belong, all have a place, and are able to live lives of fullness. Jean Vanier said to love is not to do for someone, but to reveal for someone their value, their worth. So he lived with these two men. He lived with these two men. He brought them from the institution, which is all they knew their entire lives, and he lived with them, and they did everything together. They cooked together. They gardened together. They prayed together. He said they fought together. They forgave each other. And he went on to say, you know, when I entered into this, my primary focus is of what good might I do for them. And then as the days went by and the weeks went by and the months went by, I realized that I was the one being changed. I was the one being transformed. I was the one being taught. I was the one healed. And he said, to love is not to do for someone. That's generosity. Nothing wrong with generosity. But to be generous, you still are in a posture of power and control over someone. To love is to enter into a covenant where I accept you as you are, and you accept me as I am. And we accept one another in our frailty, our fragility, and our beauty. As I said, Barbara Brown Taylor said the most important and challenging spiritual work is to see and welcome the presence of God in each person. To encounter each person, not as someone to use, to save, to fix, to solve, to convert, to change, to convince, but to see in each person they share the same heart as your heart. A heart that cries to belong, to be loved. Where do we see Christ? Where did we see Christ? Where was the presence of Christ found? With the poor, the vulnerable, the broken, the outcast, the unwanted, the rejected. Maybe Christ is hidden in our vulnerability, in our weakness. So the two brothers, Raymond and Harold, the sun went down. They thought they better get around to talking about this. And Harold said, you know, well, what? I don't know what you're thinking about what to do with this girl. But I know what I'm thinking. And Raymond said, I think we need to take her in. Maybe she won't be so much trouble. Harold said, no, heck no. Heck, wait a minute. I'm not talking about that. I mean, look at us too. We're two, this is my dad's language, we're two old farts. I mean, we're old, we're fixed in our ways. What are we going to do? I mean, we live 17 miles south of the nearest town, and when you get to that town, it ain't much. I mean, how are we going to change? How are you going to change in your old age? And Raymond said, I don't know how, but I am. I just know I am. And what do you mean she ain't going to be trouble? Raymond said, no. I said maybe she's not going to be as much trouble. And Harold said, well, you know, have you ever lived with a girl? And Raymond said, well, you know I ain't. And Harold said, well, they're different. They need things. They need things on a regular schedule. Girls got ideas in their heads that neither you or I can even imagine. And besides, there's the baby. You know anything about babies? And Raymond said, well, you know, I don't know nothing about babies, but I guess I don't. I think we got time. We got time to learn. And Raymond turned to his brother and said, look, I'm going to do this thing. Are you in with me? And Harold turned to his brother. I guess. I don't think we should, but I guess. But there's one thing, Raymond. What's that? You sure are stubborn. You've gotten downright ornery to live with. And there's one more thing I want to say. And Raymond said, what's that? This ain't going to be no Sunday school picnic. And Raymond said, well, you ain't never been to Sunday school. Someday you'll die without enough trouble in your life. The right kind of trouble. Where might God be stirring? Inviting in your life the right kind of trouble. Because you might be surprised to discover that you will be the one who will be healed and made whole. Let's continue to worship God through the morning offering.